Has the U.S. finally become a soccer powerhouse? We could find out this week. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown here with Thomas Bradley. This week, we will hear why young female athletes are up to 10 times more likely to blow out a knee.
And we'll give our thoughts on an interesting proposal to overhaul the NBA draft.
But first, no vuvuzelas this time, but lots of sunshine and cachaça as the World Cup goes to Brazil.
The host country Brazil is loaded, and they are the odds-on favorite to take home the top prize. They won their opener against Croatia on Thursday afternoon. But Germany and Spain are also poised to make another deep run, and the U.S. has an interesting team. For more on the World Cup, I spoke with Martin Rogers of Yahoo Sports. Martin, what is the mood in Brazil at the start of this year's World Cup?
The mood is very interesting. Obviously, Brazil is a country that absolutely loves soccer. It has an incredible passion for the game, but there's some social unrest down here. People are a little bit angry that the government has spent billions and billions of dollars on hosting this tournament, but basic infrastructure like public transport and education has been somewhat neglected. And there have been strikes. There's a traffic chaos in Sao Paulo right now because of the subway strikes.
Are the protests nationwide, or is it primarily contained to Sao Paulo?
It's nationwide, and it does take place all over, and we will see that as the games spread around the country, but it's definitely centered in the major cities like Rio de Janeiro, like Sao Paulo, and a little bit in the capital of Brasilia as well. Just the size of those cities just means that the protests tend to be bigger and better organized, and I think we'll see that trend continue.
The protests will obviously be something to keep an eye on throughout the World Cup, but I want to talk about the actual competition, the actual World Cup. Brazil rolled past Croatia on Thursday afternoon 3-1, albeit somewhat controversially on their second goal, but they did get the win and a third goal to make that second goal irrelevant. Is Brazil the odds-on favorite to win the whole thing?
For me, it is. Yeah, I think when you get a country like that, Brazil is always one of the favorites anytime a World Cup is held, just because of their history in the sport. And when you throw in home country advantage, it makes a huge difference. We always see time and time again, European countries do very well when the World Cup's held in Europe. South American countries do very well when the World Cup's held in South America. And I just can't see anyone actually beating Brazil on their own turf. I think there'll be teams that can maybe, you know, take them close and give them a tight game. But when it comes to actually getting over the hump, I think it'll be a challenge that will be too much for any other team to take on.
Casual sports fans and casual soccer fans usually point towards the World Cup as something they're really going to get invested in and really pay attention to. What do U.S. fans have to look forward to this year?
I think they have some fascinating games to look forward to. This is a young squad. Only 5 members of the roster have ever played in the World Cup game before, which is very unusual. Normally, teams really try and pack their squad with experience. So some exciting new names, people that, you know, guys that people may not be necessarily familiar with and have a chance to shine. I think if the U.S. can get a victory in their first game against Ghana, it really sets things up very well. If they don't, then they really could struggle to get out of Group G, which is known as the group of death. I think you have to look out for guys like Clint Dempsey, the captain of the team, Tim Howard, also one of the finest goalkeepers in the world. The U.S. needs those players to shine if they're going to have a chance of making progress.
You mentioned the group of death. That includes Germany, Portugal, and U.S.'s first game on Monday against Ghana. Do you think the U.S. can make it out of group play?
I do, and I may be a little bit alone here. A lot of experts are saying that Germany and Portugal and maybe even Ghana are the teams to beat. I think that one thing that really helps the U.S. is the scheduling, the fact that they have Ghana, which in theory is their easiest game, up first, and it gives them the chance at least to really build some momentum and get their campaign underway. I also think the fact that they're playing Germany, which in my opinion is by far the strongest team in the group, in their final game is another advantage. By the time the U.S. plays Germany, the Germans may already have effectively qualified if they've won their first 2 games. They may rest some players, they may take their foot off the gas a little bit, which may open the door for the Americans to get perhaps a draw, which may be enough at that point to put them through to the round of 16.
Last World Cup, everyone was talking about the vuvuzela, an instrument that makes a a buzzing noise in the stadium, a loud horn, really, really got on the nerve of TV fans, and quite frankly, FIFA didn't like it. Is there anything like that at this year's World Cup?
There is. There's an instrument, if you like, called the Cashirola, which is like a plastic contraption that's kind of filled with these little metal beads, and you shake it, and it makes this hissing noise. And this is basically Brazil's answer to the Vuvuzela. The Vuvuzela has been banned now in soccer stadiums worldwide because everyone just hated the noise. It made your ears feel like they were going to start bleeding. But the problem with the Cashirola is they had a practice event with it, I guess, a year or so ago between two Brazilian teams, and the fans started throwing them onto the field. So subsequently, they've been banned as well, despite the Cashirola being the official instrument of the World Cup. You're not going to see it in any World Cup stadium. So I think you're going to have to rely on the colour, the passion, and the vocal cords of the supporters to create the noise this time around.
And there should be no problem there. Brazil is very passionate about their soccer. They will be loud, they will be out in numbers, and they will be supporting their squad in this year's World Cup. Martin Rogers of Yahoo Sports, thanks so much for joining us from Sao Paulo. Appreciate your time.
You got it.
Thomas is really into running these days, like I used to be.
Yeah, until I started to beat you.
No, I didn't even know you then. You know why I don't run as much anymore?
Because you're old?
No, because I blew out my knee and then I just stopped running. That's the way it works sometimes. I stepped in a pothole, had to walk 3 miles home with a bum knee. It was awful. Knee injuries are a big problem for young athletes, especially girls.
Yeah, young female athletes are 10 times more likely to suffer a major knee injury than their male counterparts. And some Ohio researchers think they know why. From Ohio Public Radio Station WKSU, Jeff St. Clair has more.
Teenage girls scramble in a hard-fought match in the sprawling soccer complex next to the expressway interchange near Lodi. 15-year-old Bethany Jewell is from Salem. She plays on the Keystone traveling team. A sturdy metal brace grips her right knee as she runs down the field. She recalls a similar game about a year and a half ago.
It just gave out on me all of a sudden out of nowhere. I just fell and I knew it had happened again.
Bethany knew the feeling because she had torn her other knee at the age of 12. Her love of soccer keeps her in the game. She says it's not uncommon to see other girls sporting similar protective gear.
I'll go to like a big soccer tournament and I will see a couple with the same brace as me.
Kerwin Jones at Akron Children's Hospital performed both of Jewel's knee surgeries. He rebuilt her right ACL, her anterior cruciate ligament, using one of her hamstring tendons.
What we used in Bethany was in the top, we suspended it with a tiny metal clip, and we call it a button because it's just like the button on your shirt.
As an orthopedic surgeon, Jones says he sees a lot of knee injuries in young female athletes.
The majority of the kids that come into my office, and it's not just ACL tears, a lot of the problems around the knee, kneecap dislocations, sprains of the ligaments, all sorts of things. It's predominantly the girls that are coming into the office and not the boys.
In fact, girls playing soccer and basketball and other sports are 2 to 10 times more likely than boys to tear their ACLs. That got Jones wondering what differences in the ligaments themselves could be causing this disparity. He saved samples of torn ligaments from 14 girls and boys who underwent ACL surgery, froze them, and sent them to William Landis, an expert in bones and cartilage at the University of Akron. Landis says microarray analyses, tests that show what genes are most active in the ligament cells, revealed stark differences in the sexes.
For us, it was a bit of a surprise.
Landis says 3 genes that build and maintain ligaments are different for girls and boys.
They're just structurally different, which may provide a propensity to injury under, you know, the same types of stresses.
The results are a concern for Dr. Jones in treating young athletes.
It's inherent in the women that their ACLs are structurally weaker. And add to that that they are responding and reacting different in sports, well, that really predisposes them to tear their ACL.
Timothy Hewitt is head of the Sports Health and Performance Institute at Ohio State University.
This is no doubt a multifactorial problem.
He says in addition to genetics, other factors are anatomy and physics. He says the way many girls stop and turn puts intense pressure on their knees.
The hip and knee are diving in toward the midline of the body. This happens with the knee relatively straight when they land. The most, if not all, the weight is on a single, very flat foot. The individual lands flat-footed with most of their weight on a single leg.
Hewitt says this is because girls are engaging different muscle groups than boys. But while genes can't be changed, he says girls can be trained to use their muscles more efficiently in better techniques for landing and turning.
And that's the good news in all this, because those are the only factors that are actually modifiable that we can change with training.
Hewitt believes the epidemic of ACL tears in girls is preventable. He's seen training reduce the risk of injury by one-half to two-thirds, but it's not being widely used.
It has been underutilized. People have been undereducated. We have to get this out to the schools, to the athletic directors, to the coaches.
Hewitt says training girls to prevent knee injuries also makes them better balanced and better athletes. The findings of the genetic underpinnings of ACL tears in girls was presented at the annual meeting of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. For Ohio Public Radio, I'm Jeff St. Clair.
It really takes a lot to get Steve excited about the NBA these days.
Yep, dejected Cleveland fan here.
But I think I have something here. It's called the draft wheel.
And this is actually a pretty cool thing. It's a proposal supposedly getting some traction in NBA circles. And the league is notorious for tanking, or teams losing on purpose, allegedly at least, to increase their chance of winning the top pick in the draft lottery.
The wheel does away with the lottery and sets a team's draft slot for the next 30 years and potentially forever. It's total draft parity.
Total draft parity. It is a pretty cool thing, and it's really kind of blowing my mind right now because I can't wrap my mind around it fully. But it slots you in. It looks kind of like a clock, right, with 30 different places on it. And then it just says 31 year, 2 the next year, 17 the next year, or something like that. But it just gives teams draft certainty for the next 30 years.
It gives you a guaranteed top 6 pick every 5 years. Mm-hmm. It slots you in that you're going to have the number one pick eventually within 30 years, but you're not going to have the number one pick in the draft for another 30 years. And it's perfect parity whether you do great, you win the finals, or you are the Cleveland Cavaliers and you have the worst record ever.
Hey, watch it.
Well, they've benefited greatly from this, and they're probably going to have a pretty stellar team next year for honestly doing terrible the last 4 years. They've won the draft lottery 3 times. They're going to have 3 top picks. And no matter how Cleveland they can do on these picks, they're still going to probably have a pretty good team.
Cleveland is an adjective now.
Well, drafting terribly, that's the definition of Cleveland.
No, I like it. Why not? It's fun. As a big Cleveland fan, I will be the first to admit it's been really unfair. They've had the top pick in 3 of the last 4 drafts, completely by coincidence, by luck. But yeah, bring it on.
The fans deserve better than what's happening in some of these towns and cities that are losing on purpose. Or maybe the players and coaches aren't losing on purpose, but management is setting them up to lose. And they are essentially trying to get a top pick in the draft because no other sport is more dependent on one star player than basketball. There's 5 guys on the floor at the time, and one guy can make a difference for a team. Not football, not baseball. Yeah, you could have a star pitcher, but he pitches every 5 games. You could have a star quarterback, but there's 21 other guys on the field that need to produce to have a good team. Basketball, one guy can change a franchise.
Yeah, the offense runs through one guy. I remember watching like the Atlanta Hawks of the 1990s specifically, and they were always awful, but they would never have the top pick. It just worked out that way. They never had a really good pick, and this solves that problem. It takes luck out of the equation totally.
They're going to get a top pick every 5 or 6 years. I forget exactly what the wheel is. It's either a top 5 pick every 6 years or a top 6 pick every 5 years. It's a great system to to prevent teams from giving up on their season and giving up on fans? Because honestly, I think that's the biggest thing, is why would you go to a game and why would you support a team that isn't even trying to play?
Frank DeFord for NPR did a commentary a few weeks ago about how June has become draft season. Does this kind of I'll be honest with you, I like watching the draft lottery. I like watching the team, the players or whoever it is, the Cavs' son going up there in a bow tie representing mm-hmm. the Cavs. That's kind of it's fun.
The draft used to be, especially the NFL draft, which happened a couple weeks ago, is a huge spectacle. The NBA draft, a lottery, is a spectacle. The actual draft for the NBA is a spectacle. The MLB draft happened last week, and it's not as much of a spectacle, but it's still a televised event.
Mm-hmm. The irony here is that the lottery was adopted to prevent tanking. Teams used to be guaranteed the top pick in the draft if they had the worst record, just like the NFL is now, and teams would just intentionally tank, and it was blatantly obvious. And they adopted the lottery to do away with that.
And then Cleveland came in and started winning the lottery with almost no chance of winning at all. So that's...
Yeah. There's no perfect system, I guess. But this is pretty cool. I think I like it. Yeah, bring it on. That will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. You can always find us at WOSU.org/afterthescore and on iTunes.
You can stream the show on the WOSU Public Media mobile app and find us on Twitter @AfterTheScore. Until next week, I'm Thomas Bradley.
And I'm Steve Brown.